WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We're keeping calm. We're staying local. Don Moeller, we have been up and down the arts community here trying to reach to everyone that has a stage, that no longer has a stage, that will have a stage again. This is obviously your brainchild all week long here at Baltimore Positive. It's been just compelling conversations and people and personalities. But before we get to our next guest, this is one of your special places as well, so I'll let you do the leadership. But you are the one eating the Fadley's crab cakes right now and eating the crab soup. You are the one down the street from my favorite chicken and waffles in Catonsville at the State Fair. So I'll let you do the sponsor plugs here this time.
Well, we do. We ask everybody to just remember all the small businesses out there, our friends Evan Brown and Keith Halsey at State Fair. They're still doing breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Give them a call. Their full menu is available. Full Nestor only ever eats the chicken and waffles.
That's not true.
Occasionally you get the shrimp and grits, I guess, but he's a chicken
If I get curbside, I'm getting the meatloaf. I'm going to get the TV dinner.
Going for the meatloaf. Mm-hmm. They'll bring it right to your car. If you live in the area, they'll actually deliver. Our good friends at Fadley's, we love Danny Hahn and Bill and Nancy Devine, ex-Baltimore legends, really legendary folks, legendary businessmen and women. The Lexington market's closed, but Fadley's will deliver their crab cakes, their crab soup. Nestor wants to know, he thinks they might even deliver the mac and cheese right to your door. So jump on their website, hit the shop button, make that happen. And Jeff Moeller and Moeller and Gary Realty, they're still selling homes, they're listing homes, they're taking virtual tours, Skype tours, Zoom tours. So the real estate business goes on, give them a call. And Nestor, you know, you're nice enough to say that this Arts Week, which has been inspirational to me, was my idea. But my idea only goes so far as to reach out, get an outstanding executive producer, and that's former Baltimore County Communications Specialist Fronda Cohen, who was the county's link, and I know Michael knows Fronda, was the link to the arts and cultural institutions in the city. Fronda did a great job of putting all of this together, and we jump up. We really, it's fitting, really, that we wrap up with Center Stage and Michael Ross. Center Stage, one of the great institutions in the city, and we say arts and theater touches our soul. And Michael, welcome to Baltimore Positive.
Thank you so much. Thank you. It's great to be on here.
Well, I for us with the arts and with theater and all of this, I'm a sports guy by trade, right? All of this was coming together, and Don talks about when I go see Dear Evan Hansen, I'm going to need a box of tissues. We're going to cry together. We're going to laugh together. We're going to cheer together. We're going to sing together. We're going to do all these things. And I've been to Center Stage many times as well. Going back even 30 years ago, when some of my favorite performing artists, Eric Bogosian, would show up there every couple months, and I'd come down there for something, and he'd make me do some deep thinking and whatnot. All of that, everything about the theater, everything about sports, everything, a lot of things about our culture, every restaurant, every meal, every family meal is about bringing people together. And I think the sadness and the thing we're mourning the most and we're looking forward to the most when we get together is coming together again. And, you spent your whole life, we've all spent our lives trying to bring people together. This is a little unnatural, isn't it?
This is very unnatural, isn't it? Yes, we're a gathering place. It's something we pride ourselves on is how community gathers together and how community laughs together and cries together, thinks together, interacts, has a conversation together. We're about live. It's live. It's in the moment, and it's created for you as you are there together with us at Center Stage. So, yes, the idea that we couldn't gather people, threw us for a huge loop, obviously.
For you with business, go ahead, Don. Have at it.
Go ahead, Nestor. Go ahead.
Well, for when you hear this is happening, right? I mean, everyone a month ago, my first thing was, I'm a music guy, Mike. Pearl Jam canceled. I'm like, how dare they? Then the whole world canceled, right? They were just 48 hours before the NBA and all the things in my world, lacrosse, and Don's weekends are all now free because the kids aren't there. But for anyone that runs a business, owns a business, and obviously in the arts, there's so many things that power a business and make it work. And when you can't do those things, I can send folks out to centerstage.org and bringing it all together. But it's changed everyone's life and everyone's business model and what their expectations are when we put this thing back together again, hopefully sooner than later.
Yes. Huge thanks to think through all of that. What we did you know, it's gotten to us to the core of, had more time for us to think about what's the core of what we do. And literally lately, before all this was happening, we've been having a lot of those conversations amongst ourselves saying, you know, what is our impact? What is it we're delivering? And how best can we deliver that? We also got into the concept of, you know, what is theater? What is theater? Theater is storytelling. It is storytelling. It has always been storytelling. It is theater that is live most of the time in terms of its storytelling, but it's storytelling. So we quickly, the minute this was happening to us, we quickly pivoted to say, well, what can we do? Not, you know, and so we've got a tagline out there that, you know, we hate to think about the idea that our doors are closed. What we like to think about is that we're open for storytelling, and that is what we're trying to deliver through this period of time, so that the relevance, which we've been, you know, considering and thinking about and making sure and trying to understand how relevant is an organization like ours to our community, and how can we prove that relevance in a way? And I think through this period of time, we'll do some more deep thinking about all of that, but in it, we're proving our relevance by the work we're actually currently doing, which has nothing to do with actually gathering people together at 700 North Calvert Street.
I saw that, Michael, and you've written about that, and it's all over your website, the whole idea of storytelling. When I think of Center Stage, and maybe you can focus this for folks, because a number of our guests have said that they've had time to reflect during these very challenging times, and they realize it just an incredible asset to this incredible city of Baltimore City, the arts community is. And, you know, we go up and down the list. I'll probably miss someone when I do it, but whether you're talking about Everyman or the Hippodrome or the Lyric, we just go right on through them. The Walters, the BMA. We've talked to so many of them, the Creative Alliance. Tell people how you see Center Stage's role in that arts community, because you're different than the Hippodrome. You're different than Everyman. So maybe you can sort of paint for us what I call the Four Dummies vision of what is Center Stage, even though people have driven by it or been to it. What is it?
Yeah, it's beyond, you know, it's beyond the beautiful building and the four walls we have of that gorgeous building. And inside of that building is an incredible array of artists and artisans that you wouldn't necessarily find. You'll find artists, obviously, on the stage of the Hippodrome. But those are artists that are coming down in a tour that is touring across the country and delivering, you know, really powerful work. What you have at Center Stage is the creative artists themselves thinking through how to make this work happen, hiring and bringing in and sharing with other artists. And the artisans that are throughout our building, when you know, most people come in our building, they see all the pretty parts of the building. You know, there's a lobby out front and a lovely theater they get to go sit in. What they don't see is the sort of behind the scenes. There's a huge number of people working in all different kinds of shops, a scene shop and a prop shop and an upholstery shop even, or a costume shop, who are the craftspeople, putting the crafts together that make the work on stage happen. And so, in these moments like this, where it's not right now about our building, obviously, people can't go there. It is about our creativity. It is about our people. And one of the things I'm most proud of the work we're doing now, not only of obviously being able to share stories still, but the work our production people are doing. So I'm proud of the fact that we've kept our staff on. They're the core of who we are. We are paying them. We paid the artists that have finished the last show that we were doing and have put that on video. We're very proud of staying together. And in being together, we said, what can we do? How best can we serve the community? Both storytelling, obviously. But almost 3 weeks ago now, our director of our costume shop got inspired by a story he saw out of Oklahoma at the time, which has now become a more national story, but was just sort of the beginning. And he saw a story about a hospital in Oklahoma asking seamstresses to come together and make surgical masks. And now, for the last 3 weeks, and in fact inspiring many other theaters across the country, our costume shop has been working day and night making surgical masks for our friends at Mercy Medical Center. jumping on board was our scene shop and our props people, who are, you know, 3D printers. They have the tools and the work and the materials, and they started creating and just delivered 100 face shields to Mercy Medical Center as well. So we're being of service not just for your mind and for the creativity, but for our artists. Our artisans are being of service as well to our community to actually help save lives. We think, of course, often what we do is enrich lives, change lives, but we leave the saving lives to those that are doing cancer research and other things. And currently, I think Center Stage is also helping to save lives.
Michael Ross is our guest. He's the executive director at the Baltimore Center Stage. You can learn more about everything that's going on there on blogs, education, all sorts of things here at centerstage.org. Go ahead, Don.
I was going to say, Michael, when you thought, it would be hard to find someone, I think, that hasn't been to Center Stage. I always say I saw, I forget how many years ago now, but I saw one of the finest productions of Sweeney Todd I've ever seen. Yeah. You all do all kinds of different, you know, it'll be a serious drama, it'll be a comedy, it'll be an occasional musical. And the interesting thing when I think of that particular production of Sweeney Todd was it was clearly Sweeney Todd, it's clearly Sondheim, but it's not the Sweeney Todd that you've seen before. Everything at Center Stage has a little individual twist on it. Is that accurate?
That's a really good, that's a great depiction of the work we do. It's so much more intimate. That Sweeney Todd was amazing. In fact, I saw it a number of times, passed out half the times I saw it because of all the blood we used on that stage. it was a beautiful production. That blood just kept coming. I think what you experience is a really, we have intimate settings to watch this work in. You're not very far from the human beings making that work on that stage. You're right there with them in that story. And I think you're right. We do a variety of different kinds of things. We really, the other thing our ethos for Center Stage is access for all. And we mean it deeply, that we want to be telling all people's stories. And then we want to be telling them in all different kinds of fashion, from a very contemporary, hard-hitting social issue, wake you up about something that's going on in the world today, you know, to some happy, smiley, tap-dancing musical, whatever it might be. We go from one end to the other, and in different spaces throughout our building as well, and including, we actually do a production now that we tour out to a number of different community centers, in a way of getting access for people that couldn't necessarily come to Center Stage. We bring a production out into the community as well.
Michael, one of the things we've learned here going through all these different places is every single website we've been on all week has an education button or something with children, something that, and, you know, one of the things Don and I have really lamented, and I live downtown, I live at the harbor, and I live across from the Science Center and the aquarium, and I don't see the yellow school buses pulling up after Freddie Gray the way I once did, where it was a field trip to come into the city to do lots of different things. At some point, we talk about what's going to make this community stronger again. It's certainly going to be youth. It's certainly going to be education. It's going to begin with children. And the educational stuff that you do, and I know there's a long, rich history, I want to give you an opportunity to talk about that because kids aren't in school right now. And Don will tell you, he's got 7 grandkids scattered all over the place. He can't hug right now. And I've had at least one of their – I've had both the parents on the last couple of weeks talking about what to do with their kids. And there's so many – places you could even steer online right now with your children educationally and otherwise, that families are spending nights together, and maybe families that had spent nights together coming to Center Stage can do different things at this point to try to keep people engaged during whatever 1, 2, 3 month, you know, maybe longer period of time where we're not going to be getting together at places like Center Stage.
You're absolutely right. At first, we must live right near each other because I live across from the Science Center.
There you go.
I'm up in Federal Hill.
Is that your dog you're walking?
You guys, I'm surprised you guys haven't bumped into each other.
Keep 6 feet away from me now. Come on now.
Exactly. So know the city. And, yes, we're doing a lot. I mean, boy, the challenges for families at home through all of this period of time and for the schools and keeping kids engaged and all. And keeping kids creative, right? I mean, there can be a lot of lessons you can learn and should be learning your math and you should be learning your grammar and many other things, but also making sure their creative minds are activated. So we're doing a couple things. We have a great program. We do a summer camp for kids that is just phenomenal, and I don't really have much to do with it other than to get to admire it. It's so beautifully done. That really brings that creativity in kids that you would never imagine would ever be up on a stage. And so we've applied the work that we do with that camp to now deliver what we're calling Camp at Home. And right now we're doing a program called Stories of the World, where for 8 weeks we have given and we have rearranged it so that parents and guardians and all can work with their young people to tell their own stories and how best to tell their stories in this program. So that's being delivered every Monday. New chapters come out on our website and in our Facebook page. So check those out if you're a family looking for things to do and keep being entertained.
Michael, I think what I can hear a mom or dad in their car right now is say, wait a minute, you mean, do I just go on the website and this content is available to me? Is that how it works?
Yes. Free of charge. On the website, on our Facebook page, absolutely. Yes.
Wow.
Camp at Home. And it will give you, they're really great exercises to do. You'd think telling a story is a fairly, you know, oh, everybody can tell a story. Well, it's really about the story you choose to tell. How do you select that? How do you edit that? How do you inspire through that story? Whatever you're trying to accomplish with it. And so it gives you exercises on how to do that with your young people. We're also doing something we just launched nationally that New York Times ran last week, something called Play at Home. So we've commissioned very many commissions to a number of artists and playwrights and good friends of ours to get a little bit of money in some playwrights' hands as well. Artists are suffering through this. You know, they're part of the gig economy, frankly, and they're really suffering through all of this. So we put a little money in some of our playwrights' hands, and we asked them to write a 10 or 15-minute piece, little play, brand-new play, that could be performed at home or over Zoom with your friends and read out loud by families. And so there are many different options on our website called playathome.org and also connected to Center Stage for you to download a play and gather around somewhere and do a reading of it. I'm going to do one this weekend, actually, with a friends of mine that have a young daughter and another friend of mine, another place. And so we're all going to jump on Zoom and read a play out loud together.
Wow. So many. Nestor and I keep saying, Michael, that there's so much to be inspired by in all of this. You're just talking to you. You can tell you're someone who loves the theater, loves the storytelling, loves engaging the public.
Maybe he doesn't like Wicked too. How about that, huh?
Exactly.
Tell our listeners, how does little Michael Ross growing up become interested in theater? How does that come about? Tell us a little bit about you as a child and whether theater was always front and center or something you drifted toward.
Oh, gosh, that's a story I don't really ever tell. I haven't told, but whatever. No. You know, I never did theater. I never did theater as a young kid or anything else. Never was in one of those pageants or anything else. And finally, it was when I was in high school. And the story about me, you'd be surprised considering how much I've talked already on this podcast, is that I know.
Well, you're the guest. That's what we do here. I can talk to him anytime. But nobody wants to hear me talk to him, believe me. Especially the me part, you know?
Until I was 16, I never said a word. I never said a word. To the fact that my parents actually took me to a psychologist at one point because I was...
Wow.
Maybe you'll, the Tommy reference. I was, you know, sort of Tommy, who's Tommy, years ago. Didn't say a word. Didn't do anything. I could, just didn't. And I saw a theatrical production, and it opened me up in ways that I never would have guessed. And it was allowing me to tell somebody else's stories, which is what you get to do in a play. You get to play a character and do that, finally allowed me to actually have my own voice. And so I credit theater for doing that for me. I didn't, and then originally I didn't think I'd really go into it. I was going to go be an accountant, something quiet, I thought.
And now you're doing podcasts.
Right. Exactly. And from there, I decided I'm not going to do that accounting thing. Why don't I go back to that love of theater and hope to inspire others with the stories we can tell? You know, and frankly, I got to do both in a way. I get to do theater, but I'm the executive director, so I run the business end of the theater, and I ultimately get to look at a lot of accounting all day long, too.
Well, you have to make it work. Tell us, that's an interesting point. What a blend, the accounting and the love of theater. How difficult is it? And that's something we really have not talked about a lot this week, Michael. How difficult is it to make all of the finances work for is regional theater the right name to use for something like Center
yeah.
Stage?
Yeah, absolutely.
For a regional theater like Center Stage, how difficult is it to make the books balance at the end of every year?
Horribly difficult. It really is. You know, like to say, we're a nonprofit theater, so, and in that, you know, it is about service to the community and our education programs and being able to deliver this artistry. But I also get about saying, we certainly put the non in nonprofit these days. It is awfully difficult. You know, ticket sales can be very variable. They can go up and they can go down. They can be, you know, amazing for one production and not so for another. And, you know, it's the creation of art, and you do this work. It does take an audience to be with it. That is part of the whole equation. And sometimes that really sparks an amazing interest from audience members, and sometimes it doesn't as much. And, you know, and you play these games of sometimes something absolutely brand new, never heard of, can be this huge hit that nobody's ever heard of, and sometimes you do things that are very well heard of, and nobody seems to really care or want to come to it for whatever reason at that time.
So, sometimes it turns into wit, right?
That's a question.
Talk about
I said
process.
Sometimes it turns into wit, right? Correct.
Oh, you're sweet to read. Yes, that was an extraordinary experience. I got to work on and help commercially produce the play Wit, which is a play, 100-minute-long play about a woman dying of ovarian cancer. She says it up front, so I'm not spoiling anything. It's a very tough piece of theater, but it is, if anybody ever got a chance to see it, it's a beautiful piece of theater, and there's a wonderful HBO film on it as well. And, yeah, it was a little play that could. You know, it got absolutely rejected by 100 theaters. Nobody would do it because it's a play about a woman dying of ovarian cancer. And we chose to do it in a small little theater space in New Haven, Connecticut, at Longworth Theater many years ago.
And you ate good pizza when you were there, right?
I had very good pizza.
Yes.
Sally's or Pepe's? I was a Sally's guy.
Yes. yes.
Now, take Wit.
It is the debate in New Haven, right?
By the way, yeah, Wit won a Pulitzer. Michael Ross won't tell you that, but I will. He is the executive director at the Baltimore Center Stage. Keep going about Wit. You were talking about New Haven?
Oh, yeah. It hardly even sold a ticket at first in New Haven either. Until a New York Times critic came out and basically called it, and the quote was, the play of the decade, because it was so moving and so powerful. It's an amazing piece of theater. We moved it into New York. Even Broadway theaters wouldn't take it at the time because of its subject matter. But we moved it to a big off-Broadway theater, and it basically won every award except for the Tony Award you could possibly win in the American theater, including the Pulitzer Prize, which is so terrific. And became a man commercially for 3 years and played all over the world, did a big national tour. It was a huge hit. But it is to say, yes, that even thematically, you look like a piece like that and think, nobody's ever going to come to that. And
right.
It's actually one of the biggest
hits
I've ever
done. Well, can you think something like that could come from a place like Center Stage at any point?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, we've worked on a number of new plays over the years, and many have gone on to other productions in New York and other cities as well. And I think, you know, you will see some big, big production coming out of us at some point that moves on to New York as well.
Well, Michael, let's build on Nestor's question there, because I love this sort of pulling the curtain back as we talk with Michael Ross of Baltimore Center Stage, one of the truly great theatrical experiences available in Baltimore City. And as we say all the time to you folks in the county, Anne Arundel, Baltimore, Hartford, Harrod, you name it, get in the car, get some tickets to Center Stage, get back down there. When they reopen.
Well, I'll say, you always say politics is not a spectator sport, right? I mean, the theater's not a spectator. You know, you got to come out. You know, we don't sit at home.
Go.
It's not a 6-foot sport. We got to come out, right?
You got to buy some tickets. But, Michael, going to Wit, going to Nestor's comments about producing Wit, your comments about trying to at least be able to pay the bills and turn the lights on, walk us through, peel the curtain back as to how the 6 shows or so that you're going to have in every season are selected. And I guess what I'm asking is there a discussion between you and, you know, Stephanie Yabara, who I guess is the artistic producer, you're the executive director. Do you all go back and forth? Do you try to balance what might be really interesting theater versus what might put folks in the seats? How does that work?
Great. Yes. It's a conversation that happens a lot. it does go back and forth an awful lot. You know, what we're trying to honor first and foremost is the artistry, the work of the artist, to find the right pieces that may, and the time we're in, the place we're in particular. We know we're here in Baltimore and our audience is in Baltimore, and what might, how something might resonate with them. And things that really resonate to Stephanie. I mean, she's our, Ibarra is our artistic director and the real curator of the work we do on stage. You know, finances then plays into it, of course. we try to let finances play in at first very much, but it is always a factor about how much something might cost or how much something might sell. All those play into it. In our industry, in the nonprofit, thank goodness we have so many people and institutions and corporations and others that support us and make sure they want us to be here in the community. So a lot of our budget comes from contributed income for those that really support Center Stage, making sure it happens. But another big, good portion comes from ticket sales. It's why we are suffering. You'll see theaters suffering through this period right now, is we do count on people buying tickets to come to see our shows as part of our economic mix.
Subscribers, Michael, yes. When you're talking about that.
Is what?
Subscribers.
Yeah, they're subscribers. More than half our audience is subscribers and members that join us for all six plays or four plays. But then, you know, a number of single ticket buyers that come on and join us as well for whatever show. It's it's crucial that we have what's most important is that we have audience, you know, and then what they're paying, how they're paying, how they're joining us is a big part of it as well. But you know, you can have these. It's interesting to have different shows. We've seen them. We try to predict. You know, that show's going to be a big hit. That is not going to be a big hit. I think this will sell a lot of tickets. This will have a great appeal. And sometimes we can be somewhat right, but often we can be wrong and think, well, that didn't work. Because it isn't just, oh, we found a play that, you know, here's a play that played out in Cincinnati and sold a lot of tickets, so we should do that play. Well, we do that play. Maybe we don't do it so well. Maybe it doesn't work as well. It doesn't gel or something. Or maybe it's just not all that interesting to our people here in Baltimore, and it doesn't sell as well as it did in Cincinnati.
Well,
that can happen.
Take a positive spin on that, Michael, for a minute. Can you identify a show at Center
yeah,
Stage that came in and did really well, and you said, son of a gun, I wouldn't have predicted that.
I got to tell you, there was a piece that we did about 3 years ago, and then we brought it back last year called Twisted Melodies. Now, it's a title nobody's ever heard of in their life because brand new piece. And this came out of a small theater in Chicago, and it was very small scale as it got developed. It was one person show, basically, and developed by the guy that played it and the guy that wrote it, same guy. And he had done this little sort of very small show in Chicago. Our people had gone to see it. I got a script for it. I read it and thought, this thing is a bit of a mess. Like, I don't know what? We're going to develop this into something on our main stage and have it on our theater. And yeah. I could tell you another story about a famous moment of losing a play. But this one we kept. So this one, they did. We went out and worked on it. And it takes work. It's like a writer does with editors. It's like, you know, all of this is, it takes work to refine and to bring out the story. And so they worked and worked and worked, brought this story out, brought in director, brought in designers, developed this piece. We got into rehearsal. I go into the first preview. I watch this thing, and it is stunning. I mean, I was stunned, as most people as they saw it, were by the end of the show. The ending of it was spectacularly, beautifully handled. And the show, called Twisted Melodies, was actually the life of Donny Hathaway, which we then were advertising after that a lot, saying, so Donny Hathaway, familiar to some people as one of the greatest soul singers of the 70s, 80s, and he... and it's the story of his life. And his life, if you knew it, and many people did that came in, ended tragically early, in his early 30s, when he either fell or purposely threw out a window in a hotel room in New York and killed himself. So you're also thinking, okay, the end of this play, we all know what the end of this play is, or many people do as they come into it, and it's about a man who ultimately commits suicide. Really tough, right? This thing, so it was tough. Nobody had ever heard of it. I thought originally it was a mess. One of the biggest selling things we'd ever done. In fact, we brought it back, sold more tickets because it was powerful, both entertaining. Wow. That music is spectacular. The performance was unbelievable. and what you learned and thought about in a really positive way about mental illness and what it can do to these extraordinarily talented people was a really powerful message that people took from it. Didn't take the, you know, it was heavy, it was hard, but I think people took a message of hope in a way of making sure we're taking care of people that have mental illnesses and working with them to, you know, have them achieve their lives and their talents. We actually ended up bringing it back, performing it again at Center Stage, and then touring it to the Apollo Theater in New York, which is one of the greatest experiences I've ever had. But I never thought in my life I would be doing a show.
Was that your first trip to the Apollo, Michael?
And it was, unfortunately, yes, embarrassingly enough, my first trip ever to the Apollo Theater.
I hope you got some fried chicken and some soul food down the street somewhere.
I did, actually.
I hope you went to Sylvia's or something, did something up there.
It was spectacular. I'd never been there. What? And you know it the minute you walk into it. It's so historic. You can feel it as you're sitting in there. It was huge. I was beaming with pride being in that space and performing that show there.
Michael Ross is our guest. He's executive director at the Baltimore Center Stage. Don, you almost done, but Mike, you got more for him. What do you got for him?
Well, I tell you, we could talk for hours. I mean, I'm just enjoying this. Michael, what are you excited about? And you've been gracious with your time. What are you excited about, as I say, when we finally get the all clear and we can go outside again? What excites you about what's coming up at Center Stage? When folks are out there right now, they got cabin fever. They want you to say, here's what's going to happen at Center Stage.
That's so great. We are plotting and planning that. We haven't yet announced our next season as we're trying to get through all of this and figure out what we can do, when we can do it. We're just about to do that, so I can't even tell you a play yet for next season. I'm excited.
We'll have to bring you back when you figure it out, right? That's all.
I love them all.
You want another Twisted Melodies, right?
Yes, exactly. What I love the most is the writers who come to work with us. And I think when you'll see the season announcer, it's an extraordinary group of writers, these really creative minds, to have them back with us, figuring out these stories and how they want to tell these stories and all that. But for me, it's also just going to be gathering. We're plotting and planning, thinking of how we just have kind of a open house cocktail reception, whatever it is, that we're just open one day, whatever that we can finally get the all clear. And just have people gather with us again. That's the most important thing.
Nestor and I will be there to have cocktails. Nestor, we said that Arts Week was going to be inspirational. And I tell you,
I'm good.
Michael Ross takes us out of here on a high note.
I mean, I have so many places to visit now once we get things going, some new friends. Michael Ross, you've been a great guest. We really appreciate your time. We're going to send everybody to centerstage.org. And thanks for coming on with us. And but last question for you, because I know I learned throughout all of this that Mohler has seen A Chorus Line like 1,000 times. So. What and I've compared Jared Kushner to Pippin several times this week. So, I'm trying to think. I love the Fantastics. That's one of my favorite shows. What's your favorite show?
Oh my God! My favorite play ever is The Glass Menagerie, which is just a beautiful lyric piece of theater. I gotta say, in terms of musicals, I would put West Side Story above anything else.
How about that?
All its artistry. But I would tell you currently, now when Broadway comes back on, if you haven't seen, I think you'll really love, if you have not seen Come From Away, you've got to see Come From Away.
It's spectacular, isn't it?
It is, isn't it?
All right.
I wept, you know, from the moment it started to the moment it ended, and yet wept with a smile on my face most of the time.
As Nestor knows, Michael, you sound like a kindred spirit. He knows I'm a weepy man. I'm a weepy man anyway.
Oh, you're right? Good. You gotta go.
I think I cried at Evan Hansen when it opens up with him on the set, you know?
You're going to be a mess that come from away. Take out a whole box
and stop later. I mean, you're right. It's just a phenomenal, phenomenal show. And again, I think when you hear us chat about the theater and hear you chat about the theater,
it makes you happy.
It brings us together. I mean, isn't that what theater does? It brings people together and it gives them a positive experience and a shared experience.
Yes, absolutely. One of the things I always say, if I have one more minute, that I say often is, you know, and they ask about what's the difference between a movie and going to a movie and going to the theater. And, you know, they're the same thing. I mean, they're both storytelling, right? They both have directors, they have actors, they tell a story of some sort, they focus you on that story. But if you go to a movie theater and you buy your popcorn, you get your soda, you walk in there, and nobody's in the movie theater, you're actually kind of happy. You're kind of
right.
Like, great, nobody's going to talk, sit in front of me, blah, blah, blah. I'm great. This is great. If you go to the live theater and you come over to center stage and you buy your coffee beforehand, you pick up your ticket, you go in the theater, and you get in there and nobody's in there, you're not happy. You're completely the opposite. And why is that? And that's because it does take both. It takes the audience and the actors live to have the kind of experience that you know and expect in from a live theater performance. It's a living, breathing thing together with the audience and the actors there. And it's unlike anything else. So
that what a wonderful way to end Arts Week, because when you're sharing that, Michael, I'm thinking of, and Nestor knows I'm a theater nut, a theater nerd, you know, and I'm thinking of all the shared experiences. It's funny, when I saw Hamilton on Broadway, shortly after it opened, not long after it opened, when you could still get tickets and when the tickets weren't $500 each, I went with my wife and I went with my brother and sister-in-law, and we were sitting in different parts of the theater because the tickets were still scattered, even though it was fairly new. And what you just described is, so we got to intermission, and I look up, and my brother is literally running across the theater to my wife and me, and he's just going, oh, my God. Oh my god! You know, and I thought, you don't do that in a movie theater, right? I mean,
nope.
You don't have that shared experience, and I still see this image of him, and he's just going, "Oh my god!" And I'm going, that sort of captures the theater. So, thank you for everything you're doing for the Baltimore theater community. Baltimore Positive at its best, Michael. You've been terrific. Nestor, you going to take us out?
Yeah, that's what his brother says when he says he doesn't like Wicked. So it's fine. Michael Ross, the executive director of Baltimore Center Stage. Find them at centerstage.org. You can find all of our arts work at Baltimore Positive and at WNST.net, including a chat with Jeff Moeller from Moeller & Gary Realty and the buyatoyota.com audio vault. Sponsoring us, as is State Fair, with the chicken and the waffles and the shrimp and the grits and maybe the meatloaf TV dinner and maybe one of those big things full of beer to bring me home. Evan, I'm talking to you. Keith, miss those guys. Miss doing the show. You know, this has been great, Arch Week, but I can't, like, reach out and, like, touch Michael Ross and reach out and touch Jonathan Schwartz the way I want to and, like, sit down. We should have all the arts people together over at State Fair when this thing's over with and serve them proper chicken and waffles or maybe meet down at Fadley's for proper crab cakes and mac and cheese. Don Moeller ordered some Fadley's online, so they will ship you crab cakes. They are just as delicious. Don's going to prove that to me tonight on Facebook when he's eating them and I'm not. Make sure you're subscribing to Baltimore Positive. Find me, Nasty, at WNST.net, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Snapchat. Throughout the pandemic, I'm just like the dude. Keeping calm, staying local, and always staying Baltimore Positive.